Hello and welcome back to Starside Chat. It's been a while, but we've returned. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron, and with me as always is Zach. How's it going, Zach?
I am a little bit still getting over a cold, so hopefully my voice holds out for this entire episode. But yeah, it's been a while. I went on vacation, I had my brother's graduation, and then I got sick. So
I also got sick around the same time you got sick.
It's been a little bit of time, but yeah, some exciting things have happened in games just this last week that we can get into. And I've been playing a whole bunch of stuff, too. So we got a lot of games to talk about. So that's good.
Yes, I'm excited to hear. I have been playing less games. I'm still working my way through Zelda. I don't know that I'm going to 100% it, but I am definitely doing a lot of stuff that isn't the main plot. I have progressed pretty much up until the point where I think I'm about to complete the main plot, and I've kind of backed away from doing main plot stuff. But other than that, I have been doing a lot of like house project things, so I haven't been playing much else besides Zelda.
Yeah, I mean, I had an opportunity. I took my Switch with me on vacation, so I got to play a bunch of stuff then. And then, of course, I was sick, so I just kind of like laid around and played stuff for a little while. But yeah, the big news that happened just within the last couple of days as we're recording this is that Microsoft's purchase of Activision Blizzard is basically good to go. A federal judge denied the FTC's request for a preliminary injunction to block it. So they're more or less good to go on that. And the news that sort of came out immediately after that, basically, was that Xbox and PlayStation signed an agreement to keep Call of Duty on PlayStation. So I think that deal's going to go through and Call of Duty will remain on PlayStation. And yeah, I think it's cool that we're going to see like the Blizzard stuff on Xbox.
How quickly do you think it's going to start to integrate? Like, do you think by this time next year we'll have like a full integration where you can play? I guess what is missing from Xbox's
Well,
library?
I think it would be really cool to see WoW come to Xbox.
Man, that would be crazy.
That would be pretty insane. But I think it's not off the table that you could get a console version of WoW. I mean,
do you think we see big changes to Overwatch?
That's one of the questions I have. I mean, they canceled the like co-op PvE stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, there's
insane.
Still some of that happening, but like their big push for that seems to have died out. I don't think that them now being under Microsoft is going to make any difference on that. Like, that seems to have been something that was maybe fizzling out, you know, before the purchase went through, and they just killed it off. I don't know if they would want to try to bring that back at all in any way, but yeah, I don't know what to expect from Overwatch because it's already on Xbox. It's not like it's, you know, they need to get a console version out or anything like that. But and like Activision, I'm trying to think like what's a big Activision series that's not Call of Duty that you would be excited about?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, Activision has more or less just been the Call of Duty publisher. So, I mean, they've got other stuff. I know they do. I just can't think of it off the top of my head. But yeah, I mean, cool that Call of Duty is going to remain on PlayStation. But the replies on Twitter when people were like, hey, this is, you know, this agreement happened, was all, yeah, but Call of Duty is gonna be on Game Pass for everybody on Xbox.
Oh, I didn't think about that. Yeah,
it's gonna be like $70 on PlayStation.
It'll be basically free if you're on Xbox.
Yeah. And then the other little Xbox news that happened was Larry Herb, better known as Major Nelson, is leaving Xbox. They didn't really say like what he's gonna go do, but he's like ready to take another step in his career. I don't know if you remember him much, but there was a time years ago when I was a little bit more of an Xbox exclusive gamer where I did sort of follow his like Xbox show, like his podcast. sort of off and on. And so it, like, it's been around for so long. It's just kind of one of those crazy things to have somebody like
I bet
him.
It probably is related. With any of these mergers, you'll see like a consolidation, like a flattening of employees where now that they're owned by this other thing, these positions are no longer, they're made, what is it called? What do British people call it?
Made redundant.
Yeah, they're made redundant.
Well, but he was already with Xbox. This isn't like an Activision employee that...
Yeah, that's true.
So I wonder know. Though if
I don't know. It's interesting. I wonder if he'll ever do like a. I'm sure he'll do like a tell-all book at some point. Seems like everybody writes a book at some point. We'll hear all about it.
Yeah, I mean, again, he didn't really say what he's going to be doing next. Maybe that will come out eventually. Watch him like defect to PlayStation, but. I don't know. I think it's interesting when these like big sort of front-facing people from like Xbox and Nintendo and PlayStation leave the company after like a long period of time. But
yeah.
Either way, we don't really have to go through this entire showcase, but there was a showcase since the last time that we talked. I mean, we talked about how Summer Games Fest is more or less over at this point, but
yeah,
Annapurna Interactive did a little showcase towards the end of June, and the big thing that stood out to me, that was the only thing that I was super excited about, was that Cocoon finally got a September 29th release date.
Cocoon looks super cool, super unique. I also really like the look of that Lorelei and the laser eyes.
Yeah, that one did also look pretty cool.
But there were other random... You mentioned before we started recording, we were talking about that Blade Runner 2033 Labyrinth, which we're not really sure what type of game that is. It was unclear from the trailer, but I think you're right that Cocoon is definitely the coolest thing from this.
Yeah, and I mean, Stray is finally going to make its way to Xbox, which, you know... Always nice to make it so a game is not exclusive to one platform. So
yeah,
people on Xbox will finally get a chance to play that game. What is this Clock Tower?
Do you remember this game? It's a game that I always get mixed up with that Maniac Mansion game. But it's a very early game. This is the one where the guy with the big pair of scissors chases you. It's a classic point-and-click adventure. And it's finally getting... I guess a PC release 29 years later. I don't know what it originally, or no, maybe it was on PC originally. But it's getting an updated release. And it's will be available. I just thought it was weird because I feel like this game always comes up for weird reasons. And it's been in my life. And I don't think I think I always get it confused with Maniac Mansion. But it is in fact its own game. And
do you remember the show Maniac Mansion?
Is there a show?
Total
side note.
Maybe
was it based on the game?
Total side note. But yeah, back in the 90s, there was a show called Maniac Mansion that I remember watching a lot with my family for some reason. And like, I think it was 2020 during the pandemic when everybody was like staying in and not going anywhere or doing anything. I like looked that show up on YouTube, and I think... just about all the episodes are on YouTube, and it was like
really
weird blast from the past to go back and watch that, because like there's a character who's like the family uncle, but he's like, it's just his head and he's on the body of a fly. And then there's like the kid who's in like a full grown adult's body. And he just like walks around with a teddy bear and talks really weird. And there's like, it's just like a really goofy, weird show, but it's also like super 90s. So if you like, if you want to get a blast from the past for like 90s era TV, I would say look it up on YouTube. You could probably find the episode still. But you can't find it anywhere else. Like it doesn't exist as like nobody's remastered it and released it in any way, shape, or form. So you basically, the only way that that show still exists is through people having uploaded it to YouTube.
Did you see that article that came out, that study they were I was happening this week where someone was like 87% of all video games have been are like in danger of being lost forever?
I think I remember seeing something about that. Yeah.
Cuz like, I mean the big ones obviously are always getting ported over to new platforms and whatnot, but like 87% of games, or I don't know what the exact figure is, are like either completely lost or in danger of being completely lost because like video game archival services are just like really like companies will just like be, well, I own this IP, but I don't want to make the work to re-release it on anything. So, and no one is allowed to re-release it. So it's just going to like disappear basically.
Yeah. Unless you like have some really old hardware and you're able to like buy a copy for a ridiculous amount on like eBay or something, yeah, the game is more or less gone.
Yeah, like some Sega games are going for like crazy money that should just be like, I mean, there you can add a lot of Sega games I think are safe because they're emulated, but there are some really obscure games that are just like in danger of never being seen the light of day again.
I feel like that's probably also true of TV shows. Like, there's so many shows from, like, I don't know, different eras that have, for whatever reason, not ever been, like, remastered or, like, re-released. Like that Maniac Mansion show.
And Clock Tower, originally, I mean, it was difficult to play Clock Tower, but it's now going to be, I think, coming to everything. Like, PlayStation, Switch, PC. So, if this is something from your nostalgia days and you were thinking you want to play some Clock Tower, you will get the chance again in 2024.
Yeah, and I feel like Nintendo is doing a pretty good job in the last few years of like either going back and trying to remake games, like, you know, they did Metroid Prime Remastered this year, and they've got Super Mario RPG coming back this fall. But they... like, they, for years, people have just been, like, emulating their old games. And they're like, we need to get in on this. And so they are, like, finally, with Nintendo Online, you know, bringing some of those games forward so you can play them on modern hardware, which is great. But they need to, like, whenever the Switch 2 or the successor to the Switch comes out, like, Nintendo Online needs to be there day one. And they need to make it so that it's... everything is, like, safely ported, so they don't just, like, randomly lose old games. But that's one way they're able to do it. And PlayStation, to an extent, is maybe doing a little bit of that as well with their subscription service.
Yeah, they have that, like, classics tier, which is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, so I feel like companies are realizing that not only just for their subscription services, but for, like, from a game preservation standpoint, and like just providing people with a way to sort of officially and legitimately play these old games without having to go to emulators to be able to play them, that's a very good thing to do. So games out this week, it's not really out this week, I think it was like maybe 2 weeks ago now, 2 or 3 weeks ago, but Dave the Diver, we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording. It seems like a really interesting game. Yeah. This is like, I don't even know how you describe this game, because it seems like you do all sorts of different things. Like, you go underwater and you like fight different sea creatures. Like, I saw someone streaming it and they fought like these big sharks that would attack them. But you like take resources from underwater and you take them back to this restaurant and they're like prepared and sold. And you make money that way. But it seems like you also do a lot of other things.
Yeah, the restaurant management simulation part of it is like very deep, I've seen.
Yeah, so, and it is, I looked it up because just out of curiosity, it is Steam Deck compatible. Mm. So I've been a little bit tempted to check this out. I haven't done it yet, but it does seem like one of the sort of big Steam hits, big indie Steam hits from this year to have on the radar for sure. And then Exo Primal has also come out. This is one of those games that I played like the beta of back when that came out a couple months ago now. And I haven't played this yet because I have let my Game Pass sub lapse for the time being because I was playing so much Zelda and now Final Fantasy 16. And so I was like, I'm not going to have time to play anything on Xbox. So I just have unsubbed for the time being. But it's one of those games that is like so weird that you might not want to go actually buy a copy of this game. But if it's on Game Pass, it's like,
why not?
Yeah, why not give it a shot? And obviously, there's like more to the game now that the full release is out than that beta. I liked the co-op stuff. The sort of the mode that they had available during the beta was like a PvEvP type of a thing, and I really liked the PvE stuff. And once it got to the PvP stuff, that's where it all kind of fell apart for me, and I didn't love it at that point. So I haven't seen what other modes are available. I do believe there's maybe like a single player thing. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it was not if I do sub to Game Pass again here in the coming months, which I probably will do because of Starfield. I may check this out at some point. And then I guess we can get into what I've been playing, because I've been playing a lot. I don't know if you've gotten a chance
this is
to
what
see.
I've been waiting for.
I don't know. Maybe we can talk about Mission Impossible as well. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to see that because the movie just
came out. I actually might go see it today. In fact, I live not far, I believe somewhat far away from, but not a concerning distance away from, a new theater that just opened up in Illinois that is the largest screen in all of Illinois and Michigan. And so they're showing Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 on that screen this week. And I think next week they're showing Oppenheimer on that screen.
I'm very excited for that, yeah.
Yes, I am as well. So I think I might go see Mission Impossible today and Oppenheimer next weekend in this big old theater.
That would be fun. Yeah, this year, like, it's been a while since I've really... There's been, like, a bunch of movies that I actually cared about going to see in the theater. And this year... I mean, obviously, I went to see the Mario movie in the theater, but Mission Impossible, you got Oppenheimer coming up. I didn't get to see, but I do want to see the new Wes Anderson movie.
Oh, yeah.
I think maybe I missed my chance to see that in the theater. It's like they do a weird sort of limited release type of a thing for theater, but I saw it's out digitally now, so maybe I'll just watch it that way. And then coming up later this fall, there's Dune Part 2, and there's a new movie from Ridley Scott, Napoleon, where Joaquin Phoenix is playing Napoleon. It's the first time they've teamed up since Gladiator, I believe. So yeah, I'm kind of interested in seeing that movie too. So there's like a bunch of movies coming up that I actually do want to go see in the theater. First time in a long time. So maybe movies are back. Who knows?
Movies are back. Tom Cruise did it.
Yeah, Tom Cruise did it. He saved movies not once but twice with Top Gun and Mission Impossible.
I will say Top Gun, I think, was the first movie I saw in theaters after the pandemic, and it was everything I needed it to be. It was such a good movie experience.
Yeah, it was great. It was like for sure a movie that you would point to and go, that's the reason you want to go see it on a big screen. So, yeah. So I don't. What do you want to talk about first? Maybe I'll knock out.
I
want to
talk about Final Fantasy 16 because I want to know how far you are and how you're liking it.
I'm actually really enjoying it. I don't know exactly how far I am. I guess for context for anybody that is playing it or has played it, I have done a fight against Koopka that will make sense to anybody who has played it. It will not make any sense to you. I believe it's not the last time I will encounter him, but he's basically this villain character who is, you know, there's like multiple villain characters. So this isn't like the main baddie, but he is sort of the Titan icon, I believe is what it is. But you encounter him and there's like a fight and I'm sure I will end up encountering him again. But that's where I'm at in the story. And I really like the combat I wasn't sure if I was going to, but you have like access to multiple different like icon powers that you can switch back and forth between. I won't say which ones they are, just in case, because that probably is a spoiler. But yeah, you can swap back and forth on the fly from different icon powers. It's less of an RPG than I thought it would be. It is more of an action game.
More of a Devil May Cry type of thing?
Yeah, which, I mean, that's a good touch point because it is like the same combat designer. And that guy is supposedly called this like his swan song. So it's he's really made it feel a little bit akin to Devil May Cry, or I assume also Bayonetta is maybe a
good
touch point. But yeah, it's very story driven, very character driven. There's a lot of like really big sequences in the game, such that a little bit of that God of War thing where it kind of feels like a big budget movie that you're just also doing the combat for, and the combat's very like action oriented. So I even that is like a pretty good sort of touch point for like, okay, if you're looking for a similar type of experience to something like God of War, I would say this is a fun game to play for that as well.
Now, something that I have seen in like the marketing for this game, but I don't really understand, is they're always talking about how it takes place in three time periods. So is that all linear, or do you like jump back and forth between like kid time and like teen time and adult time?
So it is a little like it opens up, and this is like in the demo, you open with Clive, and then there is like a flashback sequence where I think a lot of the tutorial stuff happens, and you get some context for like the background where he's like a teenager, and it shows some of like the different like family elements and all of that. And then it sort of jumps forward again to go back to where it had started with Clive. I guess I don't know what age he would have been at that point, but he's like an adult. And then there is like another sort of time jump. You're sort of setting out to take out these different, like, they're big crystals. They're like giant sized crystals. And you're taking out, like, you have to take out a handful of them, because supposedly they're like corrupting the land of some in some way. But they're also like, I think they're ether crystals, because you have like, you're sort of a dominant, so you have like the different icons that you have access to. The ether doesn't affect you, but it would affect anyone who was not a dominant, basically. And so you can go in there and you can take them out. And I think after you take out the first one, there's like a forward time jump. And I think that's where we're at now. I don't know that it doesn't like continually jump back and forth between like the teenage years and the adult years. So it's really just like one sequence early in the game where you're playing as a teen. Yeah.
How does it compare to Final Fantasy VII Remake?
I mean, aside from the fact that you can't swap back and forth between different characters, you are like only playing as Clive in this game.
Locked in, yeah.
I would say, I don't know which one I like better. It's been so long since I played 7 Remake, but they're both, I mean, they're very action-oriented.
Do you get different weapons? Like, do you have different, how Final Fantasy is this? Are you only ever Clive, or do you get different people you can equip stuff with?
You're only ever Clive, and you're not, like, equipping your companions with other items and weapons and things like that. So you are just managing your character. And there's like, aside from like you're getting experience points that you can sort of use to unlock other abilities from like the icons that you can use in combat. And then you have like those different like equipable things. You know how they talked about if you wanted to sort of extend the window, which you had to sort of parry or dodge, you can do that, and that's how they sort of get rid of difficulty settings, and you can sort of use those. But you're also getting different ones that you can equip that are like, you know, an amulet that gives you plus 30 defense, or an amulet that gives you like plus 15% damage for this one specific icon ability, you know. And so you're getting stuff like that that you can.
Are you getting different swords?
Yeah, you're getting different swords, and you're getting different armor pieces. Even though your armor, I think, doesn't like change visually on the character. It's like, I guess, stuff you're wearing underneath his like main outfit or whatever. But the sword you can see is different every time you equip a different one. And you have like a blacksmith at like the hub area that you go to, and he can sometimes craft you a new one or upgrade the stuff you already have equipped. And mostly it's built around like, I guess, upgrading your weapon and your armor, but also just spending the experience points to upgrade your different icon abilities is sort of how they handle the somewhat RPG like elements. But
are you playing this on is it only on PlayStation 5?
I think it is only PS5. Did release an update that made it so that you can turn off the motion blur, which I pretty much always turn off because I think it looks much cleaner to not have motion blur on.
I agree with that.
So I turned that off, and I think it does make it look better. So that was an update they added within the last couple of weeks, probably. But I'm enjoying it so far, and I couldn't tell you like a chapter that I'm at as far as like I'm, you know, chapter 9 of 16. I couldn't give you that sort of bookmark to tell you exactly where I am, but it's definitely, I think, doing a pretty good job with the different characters. And, I am comfortable putting it on our top 10 list.
Whoa. Where are you going
to put it? That's a big question. I think I would put it above Fire Emblem Engage, but Fire Emblem Engage is just kind of like hanging out there. I don't like our top 10 list is more or less, aside from Tears of the Kingdom, it's more or less just like these are the games I've played.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily in any order, but I'll pencil it in at number 2 for now.
Wow. Now I have heard of the other games you've been playing, except for I don't know what After Image is.
So After Image is a Metroidvania that's pretty inspired by Hollow Knight. Such that it's even got a Hollow Knight Easter egg where you can get into this like secret area, and there's like a little, it almost becomes grayscale, and there's like a bench and a lamp light or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. And then you pick up basically what looks to be like the Hollow Knight helmet thing or head, whatever it would be. And that's just like an item that you can equip in the game. But it's very colorful. I think the box art doesn't do the game any favors because it looks kind of generic anime from the box art and like the main character. And there is kind of an annoying like side character that is like a very anime tropey type of a character. There's like a bunch of different biomes to go explore, and it's a longer game than I thought it was going to be. And there's a lot of like big boss fights that I think get better over time. Like the early fights I thought were kind of like DPS checks. They were more or less like I could just stand toe to toe with you and just like just keep attacking you and, you know, use a health potion now and then if I need to, and then you'll die. But later on in the game you can't really do that anymore. And you have to start learning the patterns of the bosses, and the fights become more interesting, I thought. I didn't finish it. I played a ton of it while I was on vacation, but I haven't finished it. I got stuck on a boss, and then I got back home and started playing Final Fantasy 16, and I haven't returned to it. But I think it's a good game that I would also add to our top 10 list.
Whoa.
That's the big question. I think the fact that I haven't finished it maybe hurts it a little bit, but I do think it's a good one. If you like Metroidvanias, I would say it's good. There's like a full skill tree as well. Like you, the way leveling up works is you gain experience points for killing enemies, and then you use those experience points to, every time you level up, you gain like a little bit of stats, but then you get like a talent point, I think, that you can use to unlock different things in the skill tree. And there's like a bunch of different weapons, and each of the weapons has like different abilities that you can unlock, different special moves, basically. And they've got like, you know, a great sword, a normal sword, a katana. They've got the dual blades, like the short swords. And they've got like a whip and a scythe. And they all feel pretty fun to use. And so you sort of can make a different build based on the types of weapons you want to choose to use. And it does the sort of Dark Souls thing of when you die, you drop your experience, but you can go pick it back up again. But it doesn't feel as soul draining in this game as it does in some other Souls-like games, because you can always just like, okay, I'm not going to even bother with this boss until I hit that next level up. And then when you go fight the boss, if you die a bunch of times, it doesn't matter because, you know, you've already leveled up. And so you're not really dropping any experience points. So it doesn't feel as soul crushing as it does in others, I thought. But yeah, very colorful. The environments are like really varied and nicely animated. It looks hand-drawn. I don't know if it is completely hand-drawn, but it looks very hand-drawn. So I would say it's a very good Metroidvania that I will maybe drop in here after Dead Space Remake.
Well, very cool. Talk to me about Pikmin 4.
So I have not played the previous Pikmin games. They're all now on the Switch because they added Pikmin 1 and 2. And I think Pikmin 3 was already on Switch. Like it had released a couple of years ago. I wasn't sure if I was going to like this game, but I ended up really liking it. So the demo is out now that you can play. The full release is happening Friday of this week as this episode is going up. And I do think I will pick it up because I had so much fun with the demo. The one thing that had sort of put me off of previous Pikmin games is I had always heard that there was sort of a running clock type of a thing where you had to like complete things in a certain amount of time. Or it was like there's sort of like a day-night cycle type of a thing where you can see, okay, once the sun goes down, it's like, okay, you have to rest. And that counts as one day. And then there would be like a limit of the number of days that you had to complete everything.
Yeah.
I think this game gets rid of that.
Great, because that was my number one criticism of the previous games.
Yeah, so that it gets rid of, I believe, the number of days you have. Like there's still that sort of day-night cycle where like time will run down, but you don't feel like you're pressured or your back's against the wall to finish stuff. You just be like, okay, I don't have time to finish this before it's going to be nighttime and I have to go return to the ship or whatever for nighttime. You can just be like, I'll just, you know, go grab that item the next day and it's totally fine. And then they also have these like little, you kind of go down like basically a warp pipe type of a thing. And there's like these underground little sort of puzzly areas where you might have some enemies to take out. And there's like some items to grab. And those, I don't believe, are timed at all. So you basically go down there and you can spend as much time down there as you want to
That's wonderful.
Get everything. And then you go back up and it's like, oh, time operates differently when you're down there. You still have time up here. Now go do whatever you want. So, yeah, they've really pulled back on the time constraints of the previous games, which I think I heard they did a little bit of that with Pikmin 3 as well. So really, it's really? Maybe just Pikmin 1 and 2 that are sort of the stress inducing, like you only have a certain amount of time to complete it. But no, this one's good. It did remind me a little bit of Tinykin, but obviously they're doing different things. Like you have Ochi, the dog that you can ride around, and all the Pikmin will jump on, and you have the different types of Pikmin that do sort of different things. And I think I'm going to play a lot of this game and really enjoy it. I definitely recommend checking out the demo. It's way more addicting than I thought it would be, to just like, you want to run around and try to collect as many things as you can and get all the different items. And you're sort of finding different crew members as well. I don't know the story or lore of the Pikmin universe because I haven't played the other Pikmin games, but this seems like maybe a prequel, because like the main character, what is his name?
Olimar.
You like have gone to this place, you've sort of crash landed on this planet, and you're like finding notes from Olimar, and he's like, he has already explored this and has left behind different notes about stuff. So again, I don't really know the story of Pikmin, but I really enjoyed the demo, so I definitely recommend that. And then the only other thing that I have played is I have dipped my toes into the latest DLC for Mario & Rabbids, Sparks of Hope. I really like that game.
Yeah.
And they added a new biome, basically. So you have like a new area to go around, and there's like the different puzzles in the overworld to do. And you're going and doing the different battles, and there are like different enemies to fight. And supposedly there's like a main villain of this area that you'll go take down, sort of the way you do in the main game. And they do it the right way, where they have it as this like separate sort of campaign that you enter. It's not like tied to the main game, so you have to like reload a save of some sort and hope that you're in the right spot for it. So yeah, if you like Mario and Rabbids Sparks of Hope, this is a good DLC that they've added to it. I haven't finished it. It's I ran into an area where it's like I'm a little underleveled for, and I'm not sure what to do about that. But yeah, I was enjoying it. I was having a pretty good time with it. Anything you've been playing, watching?
Well, first of all, did you want to say any more about Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning?
I didn't know if you wanted me to say much about it, because you're going to see it today, but
yeah. Just like general vibes, was it really great?
I liked it. I thought it was good, but it's like, it's weird because it's not like a complete movie, you know what I mean? Yeah. Since it's only a part one.
I assume it feels a lot like the latest Fast and Furious movie, where it ends on an insane cliffhanger.
Yes and no. It feels like they tried to make an effort to have it be like, okay, we need to do this thing. And they sort of accomplished that. But like, there's more to the story, obviously. Like there's, they've completed part one of the mission, but they have like a part two that's like unresolved. And so that it is a weird feel for the Mission Impossible movie, because they're usually like self-contained things.
Yeah.
I will say, even though I did like it overall, I didn't like it as well as probably the last two Mission Impossible movies.
Really?
Because I think those last two, not only were they very, very good, but also they had like that one villain that was like...
Oh, the guy with the weird voice?
Yeah, that was like persistent across like two or three of the Mission Impossible movies. Yeah. And so that felt like, even though it was multiple movies and they each still sort of felt self-contained, they also sort of felt like a little bit of its own little series within the Mission Impossible movies.
Yeah.
And this is like sort of a new chapter type of a thing. It also feels like really complicated, such that there's a lot of explaining it has to do. So it doesn't, maybe I need to see it again, but it almost doesn't feel like it flows quite as smoothly as some of the other Mission Impossible movies. I don't know. I'll be very curious to hear your impressions on it and how you felt about it. But it is a little bit weird that it's, you know, it's only part one. And so there's just a lot of unresolved stuff that is going to get picked up in the next one.
Well, I have been watching. Have you ever heard of a show called The Other Two?
No.
It's got a guy that I really like in it named Drew Tarver. And he's on, I listen to Comedy Bang Bang, the podcast. And he's on there all the time doing characters. I think not as much recently because I think he moved to New York for this show. But I knew it existed for a long time, but I never really watched it until I read it ended this year. It had its final season. And so there were a lot of like retrospectives about it and a lot of like videos and like, oh, this is like, here's some good clips from it. And I watched a couple of clips from it and I realized it's pretty much, it's in the very much the same tone as like a 30 Rock kind of, where it's kind of a heightened reality where, I mean, they're in our world and it's real and stuff, but like stuff that would not really happen happens. Like in an episode I just watched in the third season, a person is like, says she's going to like get out of the industry and then people like literally can't see her because she doesn't matter. But, I loved it. And I, my girlfriend and I binge watched the first like two seasons. We're on the third season now, but it's really, really good. I think it is like a worthy successor to things like, 30 Rock or Kimmy Schmidt. So if you're looking for, every season is only like 10 episodes. And there's only the three seasons, and it's all on HBO Max. It's interesting because the first season was on Comedy Central, and you can definitely tell, like, it has some of those, like the credits will do that thing, how, like, if you watch, like, Workaholics or Broad City or something, where the episode will end, and then as the credits are rolling, there's, like, a little post-credit scene. That stops happening in the second season because they moved over to HBO, and then the third season is just on HBO as well. So there's kind of a tonal shift when they get over to HBO, but I think it makes the show better. But yeah, it's great. It's got, like I said, Drew Tarver is in it. And then I don't really know the girl that plays his sister, Helen York, or Helene York. I don't know. She has a weird symbol above the E in her name. But Ken Marino is in it and he's great. Molly Shannon is in it and he's great. Wanda Sykes is in it. A bunch of funny people just like pop up for like one-off episodes. But it's great. I recommend it.
I actually have watched a few things because I was also, when I was sick, I like basically laid on the couch for like 2 days straight.
Yeah.
I sort of binged watched the last two seasons of Barry, which is that HBO show.
Got very dark.
Very dark. It gets darker over the run of the series.
Yeah.
Such that I'm not sure I loved that aspect of it.
I had to stop watching it in the last season because I was just like, this is not exactly what I want. I'm just going to read the Wikipedia summaries of these episodes because I just like couldn't handle how depressing it was.
Yeah. It goes from like being sort of a lighthearted like comedy crime show in the first like season or two to suddenly being like almost a little too Breaking Bad for me.
Yeah.
Such that I kind of stopped enjoying it. But I will say, what's his name? The guy that plays Fuchs.
Oh, yeah. What is that guy's name? From, he's in Office Space.
Yeah. He's in Office Space as Milton. And, he's in that News Radio show.
Oh yeah. He is the boss in News. That's his best role.
Anyway, I love that actor, and I thought even though I didn't love the way the direction the show went, I thought he was very good in it.
Mm.
So yeah, I don't know. I liked some aspects of that show, but like you, even though I did stick around to finish it, I a little bit stopped liking it.
Oh, speaking of things concluding, I'll shout out, this hasn't happened yet, but I'll definitely watch it when it does happen. The final season of How To with John Wilson just got its first trailer. It's coming out, I think, at the end of this month, I think on July 28th. But I love that show, and I'm sad that it's ending, but it seems like it's going to be very bittersweet, a great ending to it. So if you're interested in How To with John Wilson, that'll also be on HBO Max around the end of the month.
And then another show I watched, and I don't know, this is not up your alley, so I guess you can tune out, but like you know that Yellowstone show?
For old people.
I haven't really watched that show, so maybe I shouldn't have watched this, but I was hanging out with my brother, and I guess he likes that show. But they've done like two prequel series to that. They've done like 1883, which is like a prequel series to that. And then
Harrison Ford's in that, right?
He's in 1923, which is the next one that's also a prequel series. It's very confusing to me. Anyway, I was hanging out with him and we were just watching it. And I watched most of the run of that. It's like 1883 is a mini series. And that's that's the episodes I've watched. And like, it's pretty good. They do a pretty good job with it. It's just, it is a little bit of a bummer because it's like the old West and it sucks to exist in that time
period. The past is awful.
Yeah. Well, and for that one, it's like, you know, the old Oregon Trail games. Oh, so-and-so died of dysentery. and so it's just like, it is a little bit of a bummer, but I don't know. I also couldn't stop watching it, so I guess it worked for that. But it's one of those, like, when I watch Breaking Bad, maybe I would just always assign this to Breaking Bad because it's the thing that it makes me think of. I didn't enjoy watching that show, but I couldn't stop watching it. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah, that happened to me with the first couple seasons of, oh man, what was it called? What was that political thing with Kevin Spacey on Netflix? It was like their first big show.
Oh yeah, yeah, House of Cards.
Yeah, that would always, like, a new season would come out, and I wouldn't watch it for a couple days because I'd be like, man, this show is like a real bummer and makes me like uncomfortable at times. But once I start watching the season, I can't stop watching.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like that. Like, something crazy would happen at the end of the episode and be like, oh, now I have to know what's going to happen next. And,
yeah.
But I would be like completely bummed out the entire time I was watching it. I would say 1883 is basically that same thing. So if you're curious about watching that show, it's more or less that type of a show. But yeah, I did watch that recently. Well, on that note, this is a shorter episode than we've done in a while.
I have my parting wisdom.
Perfect. Hit me with that parting wisdom.
Well, I talked a little bit about this before we started recording, but we recently redid the flooring in my girlfriend's home office. And I got to say, if you're going to redo your flooring and you don't want to hire someone to do it and you just want to like DIY it, vinyl plank flooring is like very easy to install and pretty straightforward to like plan out because it's just click and lock. Like, you lay down a layer and then the other layer, you just kind of like go in at an angle and then press it down and then like hammer it down and it just clicks into place. And you can cut it with a utility knife. Like, you just like cut it and then you kind of break it over your leg. So you don't even really need, you do need a saw for like if there are weird angles because you need to make special cuts. But in general, if you have just like a square room, vinyl plank is a great solution. We use LifeProof. We're not sponsored by LifeProof on this podcast, but
yet.
It's yet. But it was great. It was easy to do. It took us, like, all told, it probably only took us like 6 hours over the course of like 2 weeks. But yeah, easy to do and very affordable.
Yeah, I think my brother did the same with his house in Peoria. He like redid the floors of like his kitchen and I think one other room, and he just used that stuff. And
when we first moved into this house, we redid the bathroom because when we moved in, the entire bathroom was carpeted.
You told me about that. That's such a weird thing.
That's crazy. So yeah, we ripped it all up, and the bottom of that carpet was like black because it had just been like growing mold for years. But
gross.
Yeah, the bathroom, I would say, is that was a lot harder to do. We did that years ago, and then we just like kept the vinyl plank. But that was hard to do because there were a lot of weird sharp angles.
Well, yeah, so you got were a constantly toilet having cabinets, yeah, a toilet, and stuff.
Cabinets, the bathtub, like there was an inset closet we had to get into, but like This room we did was way, like 100 times easier because it was just very straightforward, just basically a box with like one wall that kind of had a weird angle on it. But in general, yeah, it only took us like, you know, 6 or 8 hours over the course of 2 weeks, and we slammed it out. The hardest part, actually, and here's something else I'll say, wisdom-wise, when you do stuff like this, you do it and you leave like a little gap at the edge of the, like right where the wall hits the floor for like if it spreads out, I guess. And then you cover that with what's called quarter round, which is kind of like if you were to look at a circle, like a pie chart, and then cut it into quarters and then extend that into a prism. It's kind of like a little molding that goes on the bottom of the floor. But initially we got wood quarter round because we thought like, all right, we'll just cut it. But sawing it was a real pain. And then we realized they make PVC quarter round and you can buy just like shears. And the shears have a little like circle on them with like degree markers. So you can just like line it up with the degrees and then just cut it with shears and it will be the exact angle that you need. And that made it super, super easy. So if you're ever going to do this and you need to finish it up with the quarter round, get PVC quarter round because it looks exactly the same and it's way cheaper. And also get those shears and it will make the job way, way faster.
And you're starting our YouTube DIY channel.
I know, yeah, I should. But yeah, that's my parting wisdom for the week.
Probably
my first legitimate wisdom ever on this show.
Well, I mean, most of the time, you think of it last second, then it's like fast food related. But,
oh, yeah.
But, you know, every now and then we have some legit wisdom to share. But on that note, go ahead and follow us on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter at Starside Cafe. Check out our website, starsidecafe.com. And leave this podcast a review on your podcast app of choice. And we'll catch you on the next one.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.